Hey everyone, and welcome to The Green Score, where we make everyday decisions about sustainability just that little bit easier. I'm Jake, here with my co-host Taylor, and we're super excited after our Valentine's Day special to kick off season three. Now today, we're going to be talking about makeup. Now, this is not a topic I'm an expert on. Don't know my mascara for my eyeliner, but I do know it's a huge market. I actually just had a quick check before this and I saw one figure that said it was worth over $100 billion last year and rising fast. I also know that post-baby, I could probably do with some makeup to cover up my my various lines under my eyes. But this is one that Taylor has been super keen to do. I mean, Taylor, I mean, this might be a bit of an obvious question, but why makeup?
Well, my interest actually comes from quite a personal place, I would say. I've had a bit of a rocky road with makeup. When I was younger, I really struggled with acne. I had a pretty severe case of acne all throughout my teens into early 20s. And I went through this phase when I would always wear foundation, even when I was working out, which, you know, made me feel better, but did not make my acne any better. That's for sure. I did eventually grow out of that phase, but it made me more conscious about choosing makeup that was good for my skin, which eventually morphed into me choosing makeup that was good for the environment as well. And as we'll see today, makeup has a lot of different issues around plastic waste, around chemical use, water use, animal testing. And I think a lot of people might say that, well, if you're concerned about sustainability, just stop wearing makeup. I've actually heard that from one of my friends. And I really think that's easier said than done, whether because of societal pressures or your personal preferences and self-esteem. And so I really wanted Green Score to look at the nuances of sustainable makeup and be able to provide some guidance there for our listeners who might be going through the same thing. So our guest today to talk us through this topic is Lou Dartford, a makeup artist focused on green beauty. Lou, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Yeah, we're super excited to have you on board. To kick us off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work and how you became interested in sustainability?
Yeah, of course. So I've been working in makeup for, gosh, about 20 years. So I've been working in the beauty industry. And I've always, as long as I remember, had an interest in kind of natural health and the environment. And then but that was just, you know, something I've just always been interested in. But then about 15 years ago, those interests started to move into my professional world. And I think, like, you know, I was looking after myself. I was kind of eating well, you know, really thinking about my body, but not actually thinking about what I was putting on my body. And I think it was actually, I think it was a random visit to a health shop, which I love a health shop. But I found like an organic body lotion, and actually this was about 15 years ago, and actually the texture then wasn't actually that great, but it, you know, a seed was sown, and I actually started to think about what's in these products I'm putting on my skin, putting on my client's skin. And I just started to think a little bit differently, and then I just started to think about, you know, where the products had come from, what impact they were having on skin health. That's like what you were saying, like, you know, are they causing problems with, or not causing problems, but exacerbating issues on skin? Are they causing problems to the environment? And it was just like a giant can of worms that I opened and couldn't close. So just kind of went from there. And just over the years, I've just kind of learned as much as I can about it. And I'm still learning, like things change all the time. But I've just incorporated it into my work. So I started converting my kit from, a conventional makeup to more natural, organic, sustainable, and just started trying to show people through my work that these products were available and they were good. And yeah, just gone on from there, really. So now my kit is predominantly natural and organic, sustainable. Like you said, they're all different terms and they all mean different things. But just trying to, with the products in my kit, do the best that I can.
I love that. And I was going to say, opening a can of worms. I feel like we do that a lot, Jake, when we do our episode. All of a sudden, there will be all these different things we didn't think about for this one product. And it's like, oh, goodness, what do I do?
Yeah, kind of, sometimes you want to close that can, think, oh, God, I wish I hadn't looked. But the kind of, I think once you start to, you know, delve into it, you can't close it. So you just get in deeper.
And just keep going. I definitely feel the same. You know what? Something just struck me there, actually, just what you said, Lou. I don't know what you think, Taylor, but when we did an episode last season on tampons, basically, or women's health products, but mainly tampons. And just what they were saying on that episode about how women don't know what they were putting in, inside them in that case of the chemicals. But then also you talk about makeup putting on your skin, just seems a parallel thing. Like women are just expected to trust that what's going in or on them is okay, even though if it, it might not be.
Yeah, and I think, like, why should you not trust these products? Like, I think when I was, like, before I started on the journey, I was, you know, I was going to new product launches, getting amazing new products and just slapping it on and not even questioning the ingredients. I think, why would you think that a product was causing you damage or causing the planet damage? It wouldn't cross your mind, I don't think, until something happens. A lot of the time it's when, I don't know, something happens to you or a family member, that often something happens that you then start researching things. That's how it tradition, that's not tradition, that's how I found it originally was. But now it is more coming from the environmental angle and people are coming in that way.
Just takes that one small light bulb moment. So I guess, how big is the makeup market? And maybe give us a sense as well for what some of the most popular products are for Jake's sake.
Can it help with these lines? Obviously, you can't, being a podcast, you can't see this, but can it help with these lines? Is that
definitely
possible, Lou? Yes. Oh, great. That's good. Yeah. That's good to know.
I mean, it's huge. I mean, the makeup industry, the cosmetic industry is huge. I think you said, Jake, but it was 100 billion. I think it's more than that. Like, there are, yes, yeah, the statistics vary, but I think it's like hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right.
It's huge. And it seems to continually grow. Like, it had like a dip in COVID, but obviously everything had a dip in COVID. But there's constantly, I feel like with makeup and skincare, with the brands, there's a constant need to bring a new product out. Although that is slightly changing, I was reading, and I believe that because consumers are becoming more conscious, the brands are kind of almost thinking, they're becoming more conscious in their launches. But it is like you go into Boots, Superdrug, like there's thousands of products, you know, it's huge.
That's something that I found quite interesting because it's kind of like fast fashion in a way. It's like you have fast makeup where they need to be coming out with these new products, just like you have fast fashion where you have the next season's clothing always coming in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's always, because people want something new all the time and people get, you know, like mascara, for example, like a lot, like a, you're going to Superdrug and you've got a brand that's got 10 different mascaras that essentially more or less doing the same thing, but they'll be branded as doing, this has got this brush, this does, you know. So a lot of the time they're almost, it feels like they're almost rebranding a product to make it feel like it's new because people want something new.
Must be so confusing. I tell you what, how are some of these made? And I'd love to say, well, maybe you could pick a few that, you know, a few of the main ones. Once again, I could say mascara. Is that one of the big ones? But I'll leave that to you as the expert. But yeah, just how are these kind of, you know, traditionally made? And
traditionally, makeup is a pigment mixed with a fat or a butter. Something, you know, like if you think back, like mascara, if you think back to the Egyptians, that's what they would do. They'd mix a mineral with a fat. And they'd apply it. And that's today, it's almost still, obviously it's a lot more high tech these days, but essentially that's what it is. It's a pigment, whether that's a natural pigment or a synthetic pigment, which will then be mixed with a mixing medium to apply it, would be that a butter or an oil, a mascara. Actually mascara, because that was one of my mascara to talk about, because it has gone on for years and years. And I think in the Victorians, they were then using, again, some kind of plant material. But then it was actually two men who kind of revolutionized mascara, and they mixed mineral oil with a pigment. And actually, they went on to become Rimmel and Maybelline, the two companies.
But they, really?
Yeah.
We should do a podcast on the history of makeup, by the way. Yeah. So I did history at uni, so I love it. Sorry to interrupt your flow. I love history. So this is, like you're talking about, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Really?
It, you know, it does. It goes back. But I think they did it like early 1900s, I think, and they mixed the mineral oil. And actually mineral oil, which we'll come on to, I'm sure, is still a massive main component in modern day cosmetics. But they mixed it and it was like a little stick and a block that you would mix yourself. And actually Lush have recently bought that back. They've bought back the block mascara in a bid to try and get rid of packaging. So it kind of, you know, seems to have different life cycles than mascara. But then it kind of evolved into a tube, which we know today. But again, it's like modern day mascaras are, again, similar. They're some kind of mineral, some kind of pigment, whether that's a mineral or a synthetic one, mixed with butters, waxes, and then the more advanced ones, you're going to start getting like to make it waterproof, you'd have to have like a silicone in there or a plasticizer. Or if you get a mascara that makes lashes thicker, then it's going to have some kind of microfiber in there. But yeah, so essentially, so it's still kind of made traditionally, but just with a much more modern twist.
Well, that's really interesting. And also, sorry, but this is a mascara. For some reason, I assumed is what you put on under your eyes. Well, what's that called? What's under your eyes?
Concealer.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. Concealer. That's what I need. Oh, I love that. I love the long eyelashes. That's so cool.
Yeah. Mascara's like probably because you get people that wear loads of makeup, people that just wear a bit of makeup, but mascara's probably like quite an essential in most makeup bags, I would say.
Got you. Yeah. Got you. I mean, what's the kind of then, you're talking obviously about the pigments and then maybe needing some addition, maybe like silicon or plasticizer. I mean, just generally, I know it can get really complicated, but generally, what's kind of the environmental impact of how makeup's traditionally made? And actually also, I know we're not a health program, but also what's the impact potentially on the skin? Is that a big question? Yeah, sorry. I make it sound so simple, but I know that's a big question.
I mean, with the makeup, like with the environmental impact, I mean, it's like nothing's black and white, is it? Like there are so many elements to it. I mean, when I was switching my kit over from the naturals, sorry, from the more mainstream to the naturals, mascara and eyeliner have always been the hardest to swap over. And still are, and in my kit, I do still have more mainstream mascaras because, you know, if I'm doing someone and they're going off to get married or on a red carpet, I need to know that mascara is going to stay on. And the thing that's going to keep that mascara on is a silicone or it's a plasticizer. So it is kind of about, there needs to be some kind of compromise. I mean, the natural makeup has got so much better. Like when I first started switching my kit, it was really hard. Like the products just couldn't compete. And I've had it before. I've gone out in the rain with a natural mascara on and I've come home with it down my face. but that doesn't happen now. The formulations are so, so much better. Like the green technology is amazing. But there is still a difference between having that silicone in it or the plasticizer in it. So microplastics are a big thing that aren't really spoken about as much because lots of makeup will have microplastics in, but it is those microplastics that give the makeup its durability or its performance. If you take a lot of those out, then you're not going to have that long wear. So it is about a little bit of, you know, from a personal makeup bag, I don't mind if something runs a little bit because I can, you know, I know that I'm going to go and touch it up or whatever. But if, from a professional point of view, I can't have something that's going to run. So I think it's just about being aware of what's in your products. But I think people aren't necessarily aware of the amount of microplastics within makeup and skincare. Like we talk a lot about the packaging that they're in, like, you know, plastic we all hear is this terrible villain, which, you know, is again, not black and white. But what about what's in the formulations? There's a lot of these silicones, microplastics and things. So I think it's just, you know, that's something for people to be aware of. And if you are going to wear something like that, how are you taking it off? Are you washing it, literally washing it off down the sink? Or are you, you know, removing it and then putting it in the bin? You know, so that's just, again, just thinking about how you're using things. But yeah, microplastics is a key concern for makeup, I would say. You said animal testing. Animal testing is obviously a concern. Again, not black and white. But it does still happen, unfortunately. So you kind of have to, I think, you know, you get a look for the logo, choose brands that are kind of having that logo on there or ask brands. A really good thing to do if you're unsure about something is to message the brand and ask a question. And if they're genuine in their what they do, they'll give you a good answer. Other things, you've got sourcing, like where are the ingredients coming from? Like if they're natural ingredients, how are they farmed? How is the farmer looked after? Mineral oil for me is a big thing. I don't think it's great for the skin. It is a petrochemical as well. Obviously, it's a byproduct of the petrochemical industry, but it's still not a great thing. Packaging, I think we were going to talk about packaging as well. you know, and also palm oil. I think because you mentioned palm oil. And again, that's not black and white, because actually palm oil is a very productive plant and actually gives higher yield than other oils. But obviously chopping down the rainforest is not sustainable. So it's, you know, it's not black and white. There are so many fors and against, and do this, don't do that. I think it's very hard for a makeup brand to make a sustainable, you can't tick all the boxes.
Yeah, that's something that comes up quite a lot, actually. That when we started this podcast, I assumed it. Obviously, Taylor's a sustainable specialist, right? So she already knew this, but I didn't. I was like, it's going to be silver or golden bullets, whatever you call it. And every single one we've done, it's actually degrees of good or, you know, right or wrong. Or it's not black and white, is it? And this keeps coming up, which I completely understand.
Yeah, and I feel like for makeup, as you've mentioned, there's a lot of different ingredients, a lot of different formulations depending on what you're trying to accomplish with the makeup. And so yeah, I totally agree that it's challenging for companies, and it's also challenging for us as consumers to make like sustainable decisions around those products. I know the microplastics one was interesting. I had actually read a report a while back from Pew Research and Systemic, where they kind of characterize microplastics entering the oceans. And they estimated that about 4% of microplastics entering the oceans comes from either cosmetics or like personal care products, which is pretty crazy, I feel like, from these really quite small products on your in your day-to-day life, but they can have that much of an impact.
Yeah. But I guess the thing is, I guess if you're using a shampoo that's got some kind of liquid plastic in it, you get shower gels, like the acrylates, they've got a liquid plastic in it. Then your moisturizer, it's got a liquid plastic in it. And it does, it builds up, doesn't it? And you don't think about it. But if you're having a shower every day and you're washing, it's the wash off things that I guess you need to be more careful of. But, you know, the makeup, and then you've got the glitter in the makeup, which is a microplastic. And it is, I mean, that's quite a high statistic, isn't it? And it should be spoken about more, because people don't, there's so much emphasis on packaging, but the inside isn't spoken about so much. And you've got these lots of big brands who are, you know, trying to do good things, but talking about this amazing packaging, but half the time their formulation is plastic, is some kind of plastic within it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the plastic packaging, I feel like it's very easy for us to understand, right? It's this physical object where like this needs to be taken care of somehow. But if you're just thinking about what's in the tube of your makeup, you don't know what's in there, and you kind of just assume, okay, I guess it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, why would you think that you wouldn't think that there was a liquid plastic in there? I think sometimes when I talk up with people, they're quite shocked. And it's like, well, how else is the makeup going to stay on? There's actually a really good app. I don't know if you know it. I think it's called Beat the Microbead app. Do you know it?
I've never heard of that.
So you've got Ban the Microbead. They did a big campaign to ban the microbead, because everyone was then talking about the microbeads that were in certain toothpaste and scrubs and things like that, which, you know, which got phased out. But they're now talking about the plastics within like the microplastics. And they got a great website, but they've got an app that you can put on your phone, and you can go in and you can scan the Inky code, and it will come up. It will scan it and it will tell you what microplastics has got within it.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
That is a great idea.
Well, I've done it with my daughter, and she's like, "Mummy, put your phone away." I'm like, "No."
That's crazy. Just on, I know that I had no idea there was that much plastic in the actual makeup, but just on the actual containers, like, is a normal, like, I don't know, like a plastic lipstick container, is that sort of stuff recyclable or?
No, the problem with the makeup is, and makeup is, it's a mixed component a lot of the time. So within that lipstick case, it's not just plastic. You've maybe got three different materials in there. So they've got to be separated. So if you put it in your curbside, well, they don't want it in the curbside, because they're not going to get any money, because they'll have to pay to recycle it. So it can't go in your curbside. And actually, if you've put it in your curbside, a lot of the time it will, you know, taint the rest of what you've put it in. So don't put it in there. But there are dedicated recyclers. So like TerraCycle will do it, but you have to pay. So lots of the brands now have actually, it's so much better now. I did a little video on my local high street, and in my high street, there's about five or six places that I can take my stuff in, and they will take it off the TerraCycle and they will do it. But it's much more labour intensive to do than, so it can be done, but it's just who's going to pay for it.
Yeah, and TerraCycle is a great resource. Of course, it does require a little extra effort on your part because you have to bring it to a drop-off site that will take those products. But they are able to take a lot of different types of products, regardless of if it's mixed plastics or mixed plastic and other materials. And they'll convert it into things like, you know, like the mats at playgrounds or benches, things like that. So it's not going back into the exact same type of product, but you're at least not throwing all that material in the landfill.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I take mine with the body shop near us. They do a really good one. They take a lot of stuff. And actually, I've got a zero waste one that I bought myself when they had a special offer on to put stuff in, because otherwise my house just gets full of stuff because I can't throw it away. Throw it away. So obviously that's cost me money, but actually it's good for my sanity, I think.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Lou, you mentioned you've converted a lot of your kit to more kind of eco-friendly options. Could you talk to us a little bit about the sustainable makeup options that are out there and how they might be made differently from kind of conventional makeup?
Yeah, definitely. So it's about the formulation a lot of the time. So they're using organic ingredients, natural ingredients, as opposed to those mineral oils that I was talking about. Mineral oils are very cheap, although cheap in money, but not cheap in environmental cost. Ingredient that doesn't really do that much for the skin, whereas if you're using the ingredients, you know, those kind of lovely natural plant oils and butters and things like that, they've actually got some kind of skin benefit to them as well. So I feel like they're better for your skin, they're better for the environment, so I choose to use those things that've got those formulations in. Also, natural doesn't always mean better. I think that's quite important to say as well. Like, sometimes a synthetic ingredient, like there used to be a lot of scary talk around synthetic ingredients, but actually lots of synthetic ingredients are totally fine on the skin and often are, as we go forward, more sustainable than the natural ingredients because they're made in a lab as opposed to, you know, taking stuff from the land. So I think it's choosing brands that are kind of, you know, very considerate in their formulations, why they're using what they're using, but also considerate in their packaging. So it's choosing those brands that are genuinely thinking about where their products are coming from, how they're being made, and their life cycle as well. But with the makeup, you're getting a lot more kind of refills, like refillable things. So you're not getting the whole packaging, and, you know, like there's a lovely brand called Kia Weiss, and they kind of, you know, bought on this, you know, you buy the refill. So you buy the packaging once and then you buy the refill each time. So it's just thinking like just brands that are really just genuinely trying to do their best. Also brands that are offering, lots of skincare brands that are offering refills. You know, you can send back your bottles. So it's becoming more of a circular economy. So it's, you know, it's what do they call it? Cradle to cradle. So it's coming back.
So if you're like in a makeup aisle, how would you identify those brands?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's key to look at, like, the packaging is gonna give a good sense. Like, I'll always have a scan of the ingredients list, and I go through phases of knowing all the ingredients, then forgetting them, then knowing them all again, then forgetting them. But I'll have a general list. Through mineral oil, for me, I'm not going to get. In a skincare, dimethicone or silicones, I'm not going to get. So silicones, like we said, I understand the point of them being in a makeup because it's going to help it to stay on. But in a skincare, for me, then no. So, and have a look when you're looking at the ingredients list, the ingredients that are at the top of the list are going to be the one that the main bulk of it is in. So if you've got a product that's claiming to contain organic ingredients, actually the organic ingredient is right at the very, very end of the ingredients list, then it's not a particularly high percentage of ingredient in there. So look at what's at the very top. Like if it's silicones, dimethicones, all those at the top, then that tells you what the predominance of the formulation is. So yeah, I'd always have a scan. I might have my little man band, the microbead app, that might come out and scan the ingredients list. But I'll always have my phone, like if I don't know a brand, because it's all very well to kind of go, well, they're not saying they're organic, but I can't, there are so many brands coming out all the time. Like I'll always have a little look online. So have a look, check them out on look on their website, see what they've got an About Us page, see what they're telling about themselves. And I won't necessarily buy it there and then, but if I'm interested in it and I don't really know about them, then I'll email the company and I'll kind of ask them questions. And like I said, if they're genuine, they will reply and they will ask questions. So if you're not sure, don't immediately say, well, they're bad or they're good, but just investigate that a little bit further.
Do companies actually respond to those requests? I've never tried that.
Depends who the company is. Like it might take a few days, but I think whether they respond or not is a really good indicator to their ethic.
Mm. Okay. I'm going to have to try this.
A lot of the time they've got a Q&A, like they've got, you know, frequently asked questions. So you can look on there as well. Mm. But I've genuinely had a good response when I've asked questions. And I think that's really how you get to find out more, because there's only so much information they can put on there. And often sometimes they might come back and they go, do you know what, we've never been asked that before, I'm going to find out.
Is it generally smaller brands that are more organic? Is it kind of smaller, more independent, newer brands that tend to doing better?
So that's, well, it started off that way. Yes, it started off that way. It was the independents that were coming through. They were starting off. And actually, unfortunately, what's been happening recently is a lot of the indies have gone under because they haven't got the backing. Mm. Like there was a lovely brand called Vapor that's literally gone at the end of the year. And they were one of the originals and they had such beautiful products. I don't know what happened with them. But yeah, in general, it started off with that. But I think as sustainability, environmental concerns have become huger, lots of the big brands have kind of gone. I mean, you could say that they're jumping on the bandwagon. You could look on the you could kind of assume that they're doing it just for money. But I think every brand now has to have some kind of sustainability policy, some sustainability plans. And you would hope that they were genuine. But lots of the brands now are starting to bring stuff out. Like Garnier bought, maybe like 4 years ago, Garnier bought out a Soil Association certified organic range, available in Boots and Superdrug, which I thought was great, because a lot of the time the indie brands are wonderful, but they are slightly more premium in costing, yeah, because they kind of have to be because of where they, you know, their practices, they're paying people properly, they're paying, you know, the right amount for the ingredients, but there is a premium. So if you're trying to bring sustainability to the masses, not everyone can afford it. So then when Garnier bought this out and it was available in Boots, I thought that was great. But there were so many people who didn't think it was great because they thought, well, actually Garnier still, just because they're bringing a Soil Association brand out, doesn't equal out all their other bad practices that they're doing. So it's like, you know, but we almost have to have these big companies doing it, because hopefully if the big companies do it, they'll start to make costs a bit more. Do you know what I mean? They'll start to make costs a bit more even. So it's like a double-edged sword.
Yeah, yeah. This is a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is another thing that keeps coming up. Bigger companies have got more to lose, so they don't want to change. But maybe they do change. But actually, are they changing? And it's a bit of a web, isn't it? And it's often smaller companies, because they can start from scratch, who can try and disrupt it. But obviously, they're going up against these. It's very complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I guess kind of my last question before I let Jake do a couple more. I think we've talked a bit about how looking at the environmental footprint of conventional and maybe more eco-friendly options is not straightforward. It's not black and white. But do you have a sense for how much of a bigger impact this could make if you switch to things, you know, without the silicones, without the microplastics, different packaging? What kind of difference can that make?
I think it can make a huge difference. And I think, like, with that statistic that you said, like if 4% of the microplastics are coming from beauty, then that's like a huge amount. And I remember seeing another statistic, I was trying to find it, about the amount of rubbish in landfill came from beauty. I think it can make a huge difference. Like the Soil Association, on the few years running for Organic September, have had just one small swap. Like if everyone swaps one product, like it will make a difference. It, like when I first started doing it, like it was almost people weren't didn't know anything about it. Whereas now the change that I've seen is incredible. Like so many people are swapping out like their cotton pads for, you know, for washable ones. So many people now want to make a difference. So I think yeah, it definitely could make a huge difference. And if, like I was saying, I was reading that the big companies now are reducing their product launches because they're listening to their customers. If all the customers start to demand what they want, then the company's going to have to listen. And also the thing is, what it does is it empowers people, because if people then know how to make a swap, they make a swap in the bathroom, but then they make a swap in the kitchen, and then they make a, you know, so it kind of almost becomes a domino effect. Swapping a makeup product or a beauty product is really easy. And then it just shows people that there are other things that they can do.
And you basically summed up two key reasons we do the Green Score, Lou. One is small changes can lead to bigger changes and empower you. And what was the other one? Oh, you said something else.
Consumers driving change of companies.
I feel like so many people go, oh, it's up to, you know, the government or people more powerful than me or politicians or whatever companies. But actually people follow the money, right? So if enough of us make a change, it forces companies to make a change. So it shows that we do have power. Just thinking about change here, I mean, what have you found kind of is the biggest or some of the barriers to commercializing, you know, or to get people to take up organic versus to, you know, non-organic? What were kind of the main barriers you've seen?
I think there was always a belief that if you chose more natural makeup, that you would be losing out on performance and colors and things like that, which 10 years ago, yes, you probably were. But now you're not. Like, yeah, there is a little bit of compromise, like what we've spoken about waterproofing makeup, for example. But I think there's always that belief that you're going to lose performance by choosing something that's not mainstream. But that's completely changing. And I think when you show people, they're actually pleasantly surprised now. And also the fact that you've got lots of more greener brands sitting alongside conventional, it's showing that it can compete with the conventional. So I think that was always a problem. I think another problem is teaching people that you need to, like, it can have a shorter shelf life, the kind of the natural and organics and things like that, because it hasn't got they've still got preservatives in, they have to have preservatives in, but perhaps because of the ingredients that, you know, they haven't got like a 5-year shelf, like it is a bit more limited. So it's just explaining to people that when you buy, you've got to use it up quickly. But I think once people actually then see that they can, that, you know, how good the products are, I think they're quite keen. I guess cost is a thing as well, kind of like what we've spoken about. They are, and they're not as accessible. Like you go into Boots or Superdrug and there's not going to be as, the skincare's changing, but the makeup, so a lot of it, I guess you have to get online. So perhaps the sourcing is a little bit harder. But I think there's I'm definitely seeing like a genuine want to try these products.
Yeah, yeah. But this is not related purely to just makeup, but someone had done an analysis, there we go, of UK internet traffic, and basically the some of the biggest increases were seen in people Googling or looking for sustainability and veganism, interestingly. So, but another thing that often comes up, does sustainable equal crap, basically? But I love the fact that you're saying, no, you can have sustainability and great skin. You can have the two S's together, right?
Yeah, I like absolutely. That. Yeah, absolutely you can, definitely, yeah.
Great. Well, look, just before we do the Green Score, Lou, kind of wrap it up, I mean, just to kind of sum up where we're at then in terms of, if you want to have green makeup or, you know, shop green makeup, so you're looking for, first of all, the ingredients, right? You're trying to avoid stuff like silicone and microplastics, anything that is non-natural, right?
Not necessarily. I think it's just knowing the ingredients. So be aware of the microplastics. Yeah, so I think just know, and I think also what you have to do is whenever you're trying to change your makeup over, you have to decide what your values are, because there are so many, like you've got, like we said about the microplastics, do you want it to be vegan? And also a note on vegan doesn't mean sustainable by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay.
Yeah, like whereas lots of people think, oh, it's vegan, it's good for you, it's good for the planet. It doesn't mean that. It can mean that. So it's deciding what your values are, and then that will help you to decide what you want. Like, what will you not compromise on? And what will you compromise on? For example, if you're vegan, you're not going to want to use carmine, which is a pigment, but it's a natural pigment. So, you know, so then you go for the synthetic option. So it's, I think if you decide on what your values are, it will make it easier.
Yeah, I feel like that's a great point, because I think we often get caught up in this mindset where we're like, if we're going to go get sustainable, we must choose the absolute most sustainable, best option in the world. And that option doesn't exist, at least not yet, for a lot of products. And so it's important to choose what's important to you, whether that's from a personal perspective or, you know, whatever has the most environmental impact, and to kind of focus on one thing at a time, and we can grow from there, right? It doesn't, as Jake said, there's no silver bullet for a lot of these things, but we can at least make some good steps in that direction.
Might be a silver bullet for some of these lines, isn't it?
You're getting really fixated on that, Jake.
Well, it's only because we're talking about makeup. Only because we're talking about makeup now, I'm like, oh, you guys look great. And look, okay, anyway, yeah. Lou, if you ever do a podcast on, like, you know, how to make yourself 10 years younger, maybe you can bring me on. What do you reckon?
Yeah. There you go. Cool. Well, I guess I'll wrap us up with the green score. So Lou, for you, this is our fun color-based sustainability ranking scheme. We have two questions that we're going to ask, and then we're going to give our answers in terms of colors. So black is the worst, then brown, gray is middle of the road, could go either way, forest green, and then lime green is our best. So our first question is always, how easy is it for us as consumers to make a sustainable choice about this product, in this case, makeup? For me, I feel like I'm going to go a little bit pessimistic. This is always my role, isn't it, Jake? But I think I'm going to go for gray. So kind of middle of the road. It's a little bit tricky to know what exactly is eco-friendly, what's not. Just because, as we've heard, there's so many different products, there's so many different formulations for things, and it's not necessarily a black or white, this ingredient is better than this other one. What do you think, Lou?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you start out with, it can be right on the other end of the lime green for sure. But I think as you start, you can get it to that lime green. I think it just takes a little bit of research, I think. But yeah, no, it is tricky.
So it's a sliding scale. It might seem gray at first, but you can get it up to lime green. I'll take that.
One point I was going to say, so you can, about the sustainability, you could then go out and choose, like, with the best organic ingredients, the best packaging, you buy a lipstick and it sits there and you don't use it. That's not sustainable. But so let's say you've got a Chanel, I'm not dissing Chanel, but let's, for argument's sake, you've got a Chanel lipstick that you use every single day, right down to the very end. What's the more sustainable one? The one that you use every single day.
That's a great point.
Yeah, so don't think that suddenly you have to go and get everything out your makeup bag. Like, use everything up before you buy new. And if you have got something that you love from a non-sustainable brand, that's okay as well. Like, don't think that you have to go and change everything, because that, I think there's a statistic, there was an American study, and out of, I can't remember how many women, but they had an average like 40 products, but they only used 5. So that's 35 sitting in the cupboard that aren't being used. So, you know, so that's just something else to think about, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's being sustainable in your use as well as in what you're purchasing, right? And that, again, brings me back to that fast fashion comparison where, you know, people will have a set of clothes that they use a lot, and then there will be this other stuff that they maybe wore once and is now just sitting in their closet for years. It's the same sort of thing. So use what you already have. Very important.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think it's quite hard for me to say either way, because I've never shopped for makeup, so it feels almost unfair to say either way. It sounds to me like grey, in that it doesn't sound like bigger brands will be that honest about or that clear about what is sustainable. And obviously with anything like makeup, it sounds like there's so many ingredients, it's quite complicated. It's not made of one or two things, so it's simple. I'm guessing it's probably like looking at like a food packaging and there's about 20 different ingredients, right? that's tough. So yeah, I don't know. It seems like the best way to do it is to follow, maybe, I'm guessing, Lou, someone like yourself, or follow other people who have already done the research and said, right, from the research I've done, these things look green. And following someone like you would be easier. But in terms of an individual, it's, and you know, walking down an aisle, it does sound quite tough.
But then, yeah, no, it can be. But also makeup, makeup should be fun. So don't stress about it. You know, if you buy something and you get it home and it's not as green as what you thought it was, don't beat yourself up about it. Still use it. And then next time, try something different.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it should be fun. I have my like electric blue eyeliner on. I'm sure you can't see it in the lighting of my closet. But in honor of this episode, I have my fun blue eyeliner on.
It should definitely be fun.
Yes,
makeup's there to make us feel good.
Yeah, don't stress too much over the small decisions, because then it makes the harder ones even harder.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's our first green score. Now we have our second one, and that is, what is the wider impact that making a sustainable choice around makeup can have? I think we touched on this quite a lot, Lou. You know, you mentioned it's one step towards building that sustainable mindset. It's helping with it, depending on what product you choose, it's helping with things like plastic pollution and also kind of petrochemical use, the mineral oil. So for me, you know, same color scheme here. I'm going to give this a forest green, so I'm not going to go lime green. It's going to change the world and fix everything. But I do think it's definitely beneficial to be choosing eco-friendly options that work for you and use that as a kind of a platform for more sustainable choices throughout your life.
Yeah, I love that. I think, because you're right, it's not going to change everything. But yeah, I think, I agree with that completely.
Yep. I think one of the big things we've seen is that just making small changes, it's like anything in life, isn't it? You can make small changes and it's just always better than doing nothing. And if you can buy a little bit greener, you're going to push money and analytics towards brands that are doing that, aren't you? So it feels like it's a way of taking control. Given how much makeup must be used per year, given the size of the industry, any change is going to be better than nothing. So yeah, I think I agree. Awesome. Okay, well, it was great. Well, I've actually learned what different stuff is. Mascara actually goes on your eyelashes. Concealer goes under your eyes, and what goes on your forehead? what goes on the forehead? What goes, like, generally around here?
Foundation.
Okay. Yeah. So I have also educated myself. My wife will be delighted that finally I'll actually be more educated. But this is really interesting. Lou, thanks so much for coming on. Taylor, what do you think?
This was wonderful. Yeah, I learned a lot, and I hope our listeners did too.
Yeah. It was amazing. So yeah, sorry, didn't mean to talk you there. Thank you so much for coming on. It was really, really awesome to hear kind of your journey and interest and get your insights. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Yeah. And what you can't see is that Lou's wearing a very green jumper with a green plant in the background. So she's very on brand at the moment.
Yes. Very on brand for Green Score. Well done.
I've been living in this cardigan, and then I suddenly thought, well, when the camera was on,
Yeah.
You're showing us every day.
You're showing us both up. Taylor's wearing some kind of white and grey outfit. Mine's just boring blue. So, you know. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. As always, if you have any questions or want to learn more about this episode or anything within it, please do get in touch. You can find us on greenscorepodcast.com. We're on social media, etc. We always love to hear from you. So any questions, if you want to clarify anything on this episode, please do get in touch with me or Taylor. We'd be happy to answer. And also, if you've got any ideas of other topics you want us to cover, let us know. But thanks once again for joining us. Wherever you're listening, hope you have an awesome day and look forward to seeing you on our next episodes.